This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
So Fusatsu is renewal of vows. And so too, a vow is a living thing. And so it requires discernment, reflection, an expression, an inner conversion, an inner alignment, taking of the vow, and then living the vow. And that's an everyday thing. A vow is a living thing. And so those of us who have taken formal vows should be taking those vows every day. And Fusatsu is a way in which we all come together to renew those vows as a Sangha, which involves all of those same things, even if we haven't taken vows. And it means to be encountering vows, to be encountering the teachings present within those vows, to encounter and reflect on the very idea of taking a vow. Why would you want to do that? What is the importance of a vow? You know, practice is, in a sense, all the things that we engage in practice when we encounter the Dharma have been happening all along, but not always very skillfully, not always with intention, or certainly not right intention, not always with having an understanding of what is important, what direction we're taking. And so living within a vow is, I think, probably the most important thing we could do. To walk this path of liberation, of compassion, and non-harming, to establish our life as being that. To cultivate, in a sense, reclaim a clear mind. And to bring forth luminous seeing. To alleviate suffering is really based in caring about this life, about your life, about my life, our lives, and the lives of everything, I mean, everyone. And that requires that we then take responsibility for the power of mind, both its unruly and distracted nature and capacity, and the great power that exists within that lack of discipline, as well as the power of its clarity, its luminosity, its straightforward nature. And then to understand at the deepest level, in the highest sense, in the broadest sense, this. And to alleviate suffering, so that we can bring forth, in a sense, when our lives are based in suffering, that takes up all the room. It crowds everything out. And so when we alleviate suffering, then we reclaim our expansiveness, and that allows all of that which is inside of us, our joy and our kindness, our patience, our perseverance, our trust, our happiness, our courage, faith, to be alive and present. And what that allows us to do is to have reverence for this life and everything in it, to have reverence for time and space, to have reverence for this earth and everything that earth is, which is everything. There's nothing that is not earth. So tomorrow, Sangha here and locally and in the city will be gathering to display and demonstrate and put our commitment to our reverence for all that earth is, which is everything. And we'll join in that, those of us who will be doing that, we'll join people literally around the world. So whether we think of it as a climate strike or as an earth imperative or as a humanity mandate, it's based in reverence. And reverence is one of the values, the 10 values of that the Beyond Fear of Differences Planning Group came forth with. And we speak of that as a deep reverence for each other's humanity and identities, the way we see ourselves and the way others see us, the way others see themselves and the way we see them. And even though ultimately we realize that these identities are constructions, they have no inherent existence or value. They exist within our consciousness. We perceive ourselves and others this way. The Buddha spoke of it in terms of the sense of I am, and he spoke of it as the most persistent, deepest underlying inclination that we have. And so to have a deep respect for our humanity and our identities. And I would add, not only for each other or include in each other all non-human creatures and all beings, all that earth is, and to have a deep respect for this and for the transformative power of the Buddha Dharma. And the etymology of reverence is to stand in awe of, to respect, to honor, to fear. And we can understand, I think, awe and respect and honor, but why fear? How is that a part of reverence? We could think of that as the fear of being afraid of misusing our power. Being afraid of our ability to create harm and to destroy. To not even understand how much power we have. To not understand the effects of our actions, to not care about the integrity of our intentions, to be afraid of our ignorance of the vast web of life and its profound interrelated systems, which we are and are part of. I think of reverence as, and the fear part of reverence is being afraid of losing what cannot be lost, of losing what is so important, so precious. I was reading while I was away over vacation last week, I was reading different things, and I was reading about some things about trees, as I like to do. And I was reading about aspens. And, you know, we have a stand of aspens up in the meadow, small stand. And I was reading about how they're the most widespread of all trees in North America, from the Midwest to both coasts, up into Canada, all the way up into Alaska, and down into the Southwest. And that each tree is part of a network that, in a sense, the largest part of the tree system is underground. And that a stand of aspens is actually called a clone of aspens because each tree is an exact replica, has exactly the same DNA. They're like waves of an ocean. They all have exactly the same DNA. They're all part of one system. And you know, the aspens have that beautiful flat stem so that they quake in the wind. And if you get close enough, you can hear them singing. And that even when they're hit by a fire, if the roots are not burned too much, even though all of the trees above ground can be wiped out, the root system, when the conditions are right above ground, will sprout again. And there's life again. And that they are considered one of the oldest living organisms, that they go back to the last ice age, tens of thousands of years. And that the largest system, the largest clone of aspens is in Utah, I think. Yeah. And that's the one that they think is dated back to the Ice Age. And that it's the largest living, they think it's the largest living organism in the world. This stand of trees. 40,000. Whose job was it to count that? And I was just thinking about that in terms of, it's just a simple tree. Right? We see trees everywhere. How much do we not know about the life that surrounds us? Because they speak in a different language. They run with different packs. They express themselves in ways that we don't understand. And so we can attribute things that do not belong to them and not attribute what does belong to them. How much do we not know? And in our not knowing, how do we disregard? How much do we not know about our own living system? And so we study, we practice, we train. We try and tame the mind of its unruliness. We begin to really examine and understand the power of this mind, the power of our consciousness, of our thoughts, like trees. Thoughts come and go. They seem so common, so ordinary. We can hardly give them a thought. And in that, not recognize how incredibly powerful they are. Our words and actions, which we can use so casually, so recklessly, so unskillfully. And so we practice to free this power from all of its karmic constraints, from all of our unskillful tendencies. And because as we begin practicing, we're just ourselves. Things don't magically change just because we practice or because we've taken vows. And so we practice within our attachments. We practice in moments without compassion. We practice in moments of distractedness where we misperceive. And so we practice atonement. We study and so we can recognize that we have impact. We have consequence in the world. To not have impact, to not have consequence is not an option. And so we atone, we take responsibility, we turn our attention to what many would like to ignore and do. The consequences of our actions, the intentions that drive them, the desires that underlie those intentions. We study the kleshas, our greed, anger, delusion, pride, jealousy. We study carefully thoughts, words, actions. And we have the chance to experience the power of atonement, to have reverence for our capacity to turn, for our capacity to take responsibility, to have reverence for our ability to take responsibility and the power of that. Have reverence for our capacity to turn towards what we would, in some moments, rather ignore or deny. And that in that atonement, we have the power to release, to take responsibility, to repair, and to take another step. To have respect for our ability to repair and heal what has been torn, small and large. To have reverence for this mind, this consciousness, this fleeting life, and our ability within this human consciousness to dream, to imagine, to aspire, to leap, to commit, to fail, to stand up again, to grieve, and to find our power in grief, to be sad and to find our power in sadness, to be joyful and to find our power in joy. We stand, and all of this is done within this family, this lineage of enlightened beings, this lineage of sanity. Masters and students, living and deceased, enlightened, not yet enlightened, young and old, historical, and imagined, visualized. A family, a lineage of people who cared and who care and were willing to put their asses on the line about that. To not be afraid to care and to live life as though it is a great matter. And so the past seven Buddhas, Shakyamuni Buddha, Manjushri, Samantabhadra, these bodhisattvas, these non-historical and historical beings, they embody aspects of each of us. They provide examples, both through their actual lived lives and through their representing, their being endowed with the qualities that we strive to awaken within ourselves. And in that, in practicing within this lineage and in relating to these beings, we develop relationships. I mean, a relationship is just an encounter, an ongoing encounter, a developing experience with something or someone. And whether it's someone standing in front of you, whether it's someone in your mind, whether it's someone who's alive, whether it's someone who's deceased, we can bring forth a dynamic relationship that is meaningful and that has reality. And that allows us to cultivate, to dream, to imagine, to aspire, to envision ourselves as ourselves awakened. To aspire to be ourselves deeply compassionate, with the full faith that that is completely not only within our capacity, but it's our very nature. And so we practice. We practice the Eightfold Path, developing, learning how to use this mind, to use concepts. What do we need to understand to practice well? What are the things we need to understand? And so the Buddha, from his own enlightened experience, teaches us this. What are the ways that we need to use our desires, our intentions, and express those, give those strength, and renew those? What are the ways that we should use our speech and not use our speech? How do we live within this body and all of its many actions? All the vast array of ways that we can be in this world, in this physical body. How do we understand our work, our energy, our mindfulness and concentration? The Eightfold Path is a whole path. It includes everything when we don't leave anything out. The Eightfold Path includes everything when we don't leave anything out. And so we practice not killing, not taking life, not taking what doesn't belong to us, using our sexuality, whether we're in an intimate relationship or not, using that well, being truthful, claiming this bright, clear, radiant mind, being in right relationship with people, having reverence for them as sentient beings, as beings of dignity, not being stingy and withholding, understanding the force of anger, the power of anger to burn down the house, but also to bring something to life when needed. And within each of those precepts, we are also practicing affirming all that is true, giving, being generous, honoring the body, humanity, being truthful, being clear, cultivating unity, magnanimity, harmony, intimacy. The precepts, the Eightfold Path, the Eight Gates are a whole system that leave nothing out when we don't exclude anything. And to really understand that none of this is abstract. When we don't understand something, and we don't understand how it relates to our lives, that's really all that's happening. We just don't yet understand how it relates to our lives. If it's Buddha Dharma, it has no other purpose. If we don't understand how it relates directly to our practice, to awakening, to realization, to liberation, that's all that's happening in that moment. We just don't yet understand how it relates. Its whole purpose is to bring us to practice. Its whole purpose is to help us free ourselves. And so then the question is, well, how do these teachings, these ideas, these all of these possibilities, they all live within us. So then the question is, how do they live within us? How accessible are they? How strong are they? How far do they reach? How do other people experience them? And so to have reverence, to stand in awe of this life, our mind, Buddha Dharma, to honor that, and also to be humbled. If we don't know those states, awe, respect, honor, fear, in the presence of something so vast, so powerful, that we experience our insignificance. Because each of us is just here for a moment, but we have that moment. That's what we've been given, is that moment. And within that relative insignificance, we have power. I mean, insignificance in terms, in the sense of the vastness of the universe is true, but that doesn't mean we don't have influence. It doesn't mean we don't have power and impact. And if we haven't experienced that awe, if we haven't trembled in the presence of something that large, haven't felt the power of something like water, wind, a mountain, consciousness, then we should come closer. We should listen more carefully, look more deeply, sit a while longer, be patient. And I think really that's at the heart of reverence, that intimacy, being that close. Reverence, I think, naturally comes out. And that's attested to by all people throughout the history of humanity who have done those things, stood, stopped, listened, looked, been patient, opened themselves up. So I'll finish with these well-known, this well-known song of Walt Whitman. I swear the earth shall surely be complete to him or her who shall be complete. The earth remains jagged and broken only to him or her who remains jagged and broken. I swear there is no greatness or power that does not emulate those of the earth. There can be no theory of any account unless it corroborate the theory of the earth. No politics, song, religion, behavior, or whatnot is of account unless it compare with the amplitude of the earth, unless it face the exactness, the vitality, the impartiality and rectitude of the earth. Enlightened words. So to think that our practice, that what we do in practice should reflect, should be in alignment with, should mirror the natural laws of the earth, which is everything, which means we should study those natural laws within ourselves, which really is what Dharma is. Dharma is means, literally, law. Not a law that is made within by human convention, but laws that just are the truth of way, the how things are. And that when we live within those laws, just like when we live in harmony with the laws of the earth, that is by its very definition, harmony. We live in harmony. And so to speak for, to act on behalf of, to advocate for, to fight for the health of the earth, which is everything, is to, in the same way, to vow to live in accord with his natural laws. He says, I swear the earth shall surely be complete to him or who shall be complete. The earth is complete. You and I are complete. And that's just simply true.
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JIZOPROJECT.